And it's so amazing to see that saying Donald Trump taking credit for what has happened between Iran and Israel. We know
No.
that CNN reported, Andre, that they have used 25% of THAAD missiles they had in 12 days of war.
Well, I mean, most people, and again, do not forget, there is such thing which is obviously a very famous saying, and it is absolutely true. While amateur stock tactics, professional stock logistics, and the same goes here. Many people still do not understand all these funny, and very attractive pictures of explosions, and all those, fighters flying and things like that. It's all fine and dandy, and you definitely have to perform tactically. But real wars are won. It's the truism which anybody with any military background, serious military background, understand, which is of course operational tactical level. Operationally, Western NATO, Israel is part of NATO despite being actually the actual part of it. All those PAC-3s, THAADs, Arrows 1, 2, 3, what have you. It's a garbage, overpriced garbage. Essentially, when you go and even look at the, which is really funny, Jewish Institute for the American National Security, it's like, whoa. Yeah. Interesting. But yeah, they compiled this actually report. And combat effectiveness, or rather lack thereof, of Israel and American defense there, well, it's 35%. It's literally you don't have air defense. That's how bad it is. But in implications and ramifications of all that, you cannot explain it to some fanboy or fangirl who watch all kinds of the movies and videos about, oh yeah, tactical thing, those SEAL team, six or what have you. Look at this, how cool it is. They are children. They don't understand real war. They don't understand what is done and how it is fought. And so as the result, we know now that, yeah, what we knew all along, I was writing about it for 10 years in terms of the air defense and anti-missile defense, United States and let alone Europe, they are not even in the same universe. Forget about galaxy with, for example, Russians. And it obviously hurts them badly. Even Iranian sabotaged air defense during the 12-day war, as they call it. Yeah, it's war essentially. Even after the first 10 hours of the sabotage by the electronic sabotage and physical sabotage by the recon and sabotage groups of Israel and so-called Iranians, opposition or what have you, have been overcome. It already have been operating then at that time about 70% of its effectiveness, which is, I mean, compared to what Israel did, I mean, it's really much twice better, okay, to put it mildly, obviously. So, and it's just the thing about which I was writing for second decade now, right? That you know what? Let's not compare. It's not even fair to compare what, for example, Russians present today on the international market. Forget about what Russians have for their own use. So, and what is today we will call so-called air defense? It's not. It's pathetic, honestly.
What she didn't mention is the capitulation of Yemen.
Yeah, capitulation of Yemen and the fact that actually it was Israel which begged United States to interfere to stop because they were running out of it and Iran was mauling them so badly, even Photoshop things. But without Photoshop, when you look at actually what have been done to Israel, has been done to Israel, they never experienced anything like this. And Iran didn't even start to go at it in a full-blown, mode. So and that's just demonstration to you how detached all those war fighting doctrines and concepts of NATO, primarily of the United States, because Israel is essentially a sort of like smaller offspring of very many concepts, because their table of organization and equipment is essentially American one, except for such parts of the equipment for the IDF, such as the Merkavas, you know, some vehicles and things of this nature. It's all Air Force is completely American one. Air Defense is completely American one. So, you know, command and control is primarily based around all those, you know, principles and some of the hardware from the United States. So as the result, you saw yourself, you know, the world saw it. And yeah, it's just, if not laughing, they look at it like they're serious. And that is why everybody understands they are paper tiger. And that is why United States, for example, is nuclear biased, because I warned about it. I wrote 4 books about it. Conventionally, the United States is extremely weak. And that's why they are always into this business of the, well, implied nuclear blackmailing, which actually doesn't work anymore because Russia has the upper hand on this, in terms of, especially in terms of the delivery systems. So, and yeah, when I say that the West, combined West, headed by the United States, lost the arms race, this is not hyperbole. I mean it. We're looking at the technological gap, which only expanding. It's not going to be closed under some critical military technologies. And let alone operational level, Russians look at this. I read the latest, what is called the Troika review of the special military operation, you know, what commanded by Mr. Kavolik, who used to be, you know, the guy with the degree in biology. He was the supreme commander of the forces. And so they compiled this thing about special military operation. It's one of the huge sour grapes in Popa. Butt hurt, let's put it this way. So, and you look at this like, yeah, you're not going to learn anything. They don't understand that they are stuck in 1990 while the world, and especially militaries and such as Russian military, moved ahead and it's fighting 2025. Ukrainian military, even today, in its basically destroyed form, is better than any NATO army. So, simple as that.
I remember when they have decided to send the THAAD system to Israel, they said that it's going to be different and we didn't give it to Ukraine. It's going to be something big for Israel. But after all, Andre, nothing substantial coming out of those arguments. Even we can understand why they didn't send it to Ukraine, because they didn't have that much of missiles.
Yeah, they don't have bombs. Yeah. And don't forget, apart from trying to stop Iran's assault or, you know, launches, if you wish, strikes, there were the destroyers, Arleigh-Burke class destroyers, which carry 96 cells, vertical launch system, MK-41. So they were using SM-3, or rather tried using SM-3 in the anti-ballistic mode against Iranian missiles. But as I already stated, the overall, Iran simply broke through, I mean, big time, and evidently not effective either. And so we saw also that, you know, in the way that even US Navy is, of which I made the video recently, the US Navy is designed, so to speak, again, it's the force from 1990. Simple as that. Fact is, U.S. Navy is primarily a force from 1970, if you wish, you know, if you look attentively at operationally and strategically. And yeah, the quantity is not there. They are not capable to keep up with the real war. And that is why we know for a fact that Israel begged United States to somehow arrange that, you know, Iran stopped doing what they were doing, because Iran would have been completely just wiped, you know, Israel off the face of the earth if that would have continued. And as a result, we know, as always the case with any Western narratives, it is all about precisely narratives. It is all about that, oh, but Israel lost, I mean, Iran lost more in monetary terms. Are you freaking kidding me? Who counts monetary costs when you are in the real war and you have to go into this missile exchange? And you, the only thing you count is the effectiveness. How many leakers, you know, leaker is the thing which leaks through the air defense. And the result for Israel was a catastrophe, essentially. And this catastrophe, not only politically, in a physically catastrophe. And again, anybody who thinks that I am, you know, bloodthirsty guy who I call it atrocity porn, but the point is, look at the many Israeli civilians who lost everything. You know, there were what I don't remember the full number, 44,000 claims for the insurance companies for just restoration of their dwelling units, whatever, apartments, houses, and everything. So they did to Gaza. Well, guess what? Gaza returned to Israel as a boomerang. And then suddenly you have this, and my heart bleeds for everybody. You know, I hate seeing civilians suffer, be them obviously Gazans who are subjected to the genocide by Israelis, but also not all Israelis are genocidal maniacs. Many are, but not all, you know. So, and it's like, what can I say? It's tragedy, but again, the only thing they can do now is narrative to cover up technological backwardness of the United States in terms of military, and weapon systems, and the political fallout of this, you know. So, but yeah, now we have the guy who wants Nobel Peace Prize, as I already stated. Give it to them. I would suggest that make the huge golden medal. And many people were suggesting it. And you know what? And give it to Pentagon, you know, and you have the inscription on this gold medal, and which is quote from Obama, the finest fighting force in history, which didn't win a single war since 1945. And even then it was because of Russians took the brunt of it. And you look at this like, yeah, that bluff has been called, and it's essentially all came down right now to the organic and inevitable conclusion. So, and decline of the West and what we see now, and Israel was the part of this also thing, and now we suddenly have even British recognizing Palestine, you know, so which is like, French, obviously, they think that they're so important, but yeah, it's good. It's good that they recognized Palestine, you know. So.
Yeah, we have Spain, it seems Canada, we're talking about.
Yeah, Canada now, yeah, the latest one. And fact is, this is how Israel will basically, I don't know if it will disintegrate, as many suggest, but it certainly is this over. Holocaust card expired, you know, the victimhood card expired. And fact is that is why they always hated Russians. I mean, for example, especially those Holocaust industry Jews who ride this gravy train in the United States. You cannot come to Russia and say, oh, yeah, I was survivor of Holocaust. Well, we lost 27 million, most of them civilians, you know. So, and yeah, Crimea River. In fact, is if not for the Red Army, that Auschwitz and other horrible places wouldn't have been liberated. So it's kind of complex interaction here. They found a good place which is ignorant of war, which is United States, which was spared. You know, it's profited greatly, and they rode this gravy train. You know, and especially when you have Hollywood, you know, and nobody's gonna shoot the movie about Leningrad siege. Even this garbage which they did, the Enemy at the Gates about Stalingrad, which Russians basically were throwing up. You know, just watching this garbage. So, but yeah, there is a lot of Holocaust movies. You know, so and some of them are really good. Some of them, and a couple of them are masterpieces. You know, like obviously Schindler's List and Jacob the Liar. You know, which is an outstanding Holocaust movie. But they're not going to do it about Russians. They don't even know how to do it, and they hate Russians. So that's what it is. This America is a perfect country for this. So.
Andre, I don't know if you saw the interview that this American colonel is part of the U.S. Green Beret. He went to Palestine. He's talking about what he has been witnessing, what he saw there. It's unbelievable. You see, there is no morality. There is nothing there to be considered by Israelis. And they're forcing those people who are trying to feed people, trying to help people, to behave the same way. Yeah. And he said out of 400 centers that they were providing the people of Gaza some sort of aid, they reduced them to 4.
Yeah.
And all located in the battle zones, because they want to bring the people in to hit them, to kill them.
They're genocide. It's genocide. That's the word. It's Holocaust. They wanted Holocaust. They created Holocaust there. They are genociding the Palestinian population. There is no morality in the state of Israel. It's a genocidal state as it exists now. And because of that, inevitably, and it's already happening with somewhat, Alistair Crook spoke about this. There is now the shifting of this thing. The wonderful, and again, make no mistake, there are still many people of honor and integrity in the U.S. Army. And yeah, if he goes there and they try to find out what is happening, they are terrified by the atrocity which they are committing there. But Menti Patinkin, his, you know, emotional outburst, which you can only applaud, you know, when he accused, you know, Jews of Israel doing what was done to them, you know, it was absolutely like, you know, so emotionally charged that, yeah, they commit genocide. They kill Gazan Palestinian civilians, period. And as the result of it, Mr. Netanyahu is the war criminal. And is the basically the whole cabinet is that they are criminals, criminals against humanity. And what can I say? Maybe in the end, just from the burden of the inevitable outcry and maybe some Jews understanding morality, Israel may say, cease to exist completely, you know. So it doesn't mean that Arabs, which I, you know, except for the contempt, I have nothing but the contempt to the Arabs and the Arab Arab governments. So the bunch of cowards and, you know, corrupt, bought out, you know, treasonous people. But the point is, Gaza is a horrifying crime of the 21st century by Israel. And we have to keep this in mind. And many keep it in focus. And now the fact that important countries, make no mistake, I mean, they're still important, I mean, over for the overall stance, such as obviously Spain, such as France, which is nuclear power, pathetic as it is, but it is nuclear power, and others, and the Russians always recognize, you know, the that's it. I think so. We are looking at the, you know, dam breaking, and it's about time somebody to start, you know, seriously pay attention to everything what is happening. United States, meanwhile, completely stained itself forever with support of the genocide, and nothing could be done about it. That it's morally bankrupt country as it exists today. And I don't know what will be the atonement about this, but until the United States have 57 million of the Christian Zionists whose loyalty is to Israel, not to the United States, and they are not Christians. I mean, anything which is related to the Scofield Bible and dispensationalism, it's not Christians. It's a death cult. And so until the United States has those people with holding the serious political clout, including through the media, which obviously many of those media are owned by the Zionists in the United States. The United States shows it for itself. It's complicit in genocide against Palestinians. So simple as that.
Well, it depends on whether they think they can outrun the clock, whether they can actually launch an attack and sustain what will come flying back at them before Iran becomes unassailable due to a large infusion of Russian and perhaps Chinese air defense systems. So if Iran becomes a hard target, then it's over. Then Israel basically has to keep pounding on weaker nations, which is what it did when, you know, as soon as the action with Iran was over, it went back to bombing Gaza, to annexing the West Bank, to bombing Lebanon, threatening various other countries in the region, stirring up trouble in the south of former Syria, things like that. So basically, it'll decide that Iran is too rich for its blood and pick on weaker countries instead. Well, I hope that you know, if there is a brainwave in Washington, then I hope it it registers the fact that Iran's failure is not an option for either Russia or China, which are the two preeminent military forces in the world right now, while the United States is fading fast. But I doubt that there's that kind of recognition in Washington. The people that are there are basically, Congress critters. What do they know? And then the intelligence community has compromised itself in as many ways as it could, and right now is fighting a battle to stay out of prison, as far as I can tell. And then the White House is peopled with Trump's yes men, because Trump won't take no for an answer on any question whatsoever. And so basically the people in the White House are very good psychologists and don't know what's going on in the world. That's how it looks to me. So I don't know that the United States will go out of its way to either provoke a new incident or prevent a new incident. I think that they would do again what they did the last time, which is sort of pretend to have won, and then pretend to have somehow established peace. And so Trump is the peacemaker, and give him a Nobel Peace Prize because that's what he wants. Don't ever tell him that he can't have what he wants, that sort of thing. None of it is very serious. I hope that, on the other hand, the Israelis realize that, you know, they pretty much, they had their chance to prove that they could stand up to Iran, and they have demonstrated that they can't, that Iran can at will destroy Israel without nuclear weapons. And so whether Iran has nuclear weapons or not is irrelevant. It has enough rockets to make Israel into a non-country, and Israel can't defend itself, and the United States and the rest of NATO can't defend it either. So that's really it.
The case of Donald Trump, Dmitry, you said that Donald Trump's yes man. Isn't that dangerous to have this sort of attitude because of the information? You look at Donald Trump and the way that he's talking about whatever issue he's talking about, the Middle East, the case of Ukraine, BRICS, whatever. He has no deep understanding of what he's talking about. And he wants the people to follow him. And as you mentioned, yes, man, to follow whatever he's talking about. Isn't that dangerous in your opinion?
Yes. Well, it's no less dangerous than what's going on anyway. Let me put it that way. There isn't really much of a bright future for the United States, whether Trump does anything or lays in bed watching TV all day. In fact, I think things would be better for the country if he just never got out of bed. And he's an Alzheimer's patient. The United States is such a lucky country. They had a vegetable for president for 4 years, and now they have an animal for president for 4 years. So I guess the next step for the United States is to have a mineral for president, you know, a president pet rock or something. It would make just as much difference. If you listen to him talk, he's just basically delivering word salad, and he likes to sprinkle numbers into conversation. And as I said, it's pretty much a random number generator. So the United States gave $350 billion to the Ukrainians, and he doesn't know where that money went. And he keeps talking about not knowing where that money went. He could have found out in the meantime, but no, he's not really interested. And then the European Union gave $100 billion. And then some of the other remarkable things I heard him say is that drug prices in the United States will be discounted by 1,500%. He actually said that. Now, we know a little bit of arithmetic, right? So what happens when you discount something 100%? What's the price then, right? It's zero. So how can you go below zero? Are they going to be paying people to take drugs? Is that it? Well, what it shows is that Trump is not only just Alzheimer's ridden, but he's also enumerate. He doesn't know how to count. And the way he spouts numbers is basically just some populist attempt to keep attention on himself, because most Americans are enumerate as well. They don't even know how to use the metric system. And so, you know, you ask them how much a gallon of water weighs, how many pounds does a gallon of water weighs, and they just look at you blankly, you know. And any school child around the world can give you an answer. You know, how much does a liter of water weigh in kilograms? Trivial. So, you know, these people like numbers because the numbers are magic. And so Trump practices this sort of magic, but it doesn't really mean anything. It's just show. It's just it's not even theater. It's circus.
Actually, it doesn't go to zero. It somehow they have to pay the client together with the medicine that they're giving. Yeah.
Yes, they have to pay people to take drugs. That's right. That's the final analysis.
Yeah.
That's where he's heading.
Dimitri, when we talk about the new attacks, I would say, on BRICS, look at the way that they find something to attack Brazil, for example. The internal policy of Brazil is somehow I don't know why does he care about, why is that of concern for Donald Trump, the domestic policy here in Brazil? Because it seems that he wants someone like Milei in Argentina. He's totally in line with the United States. He tries to sacrifice everything for the benefit of the United States. But the big picture and what we're witnessing with the Trump administration, look at the way they're treating Brazil, 50% of tariffs. They go after India with 25%. They're trying to put pressure on China. I would assume that they're not going to be successful, since we know about the tariffs and how China responded to the United States. But after all, looking at the picture, the way that through all these secondary tariffs, they're trying to put pressure on Russia, the case of the southern flank of Russia and what's going on in Azerbaijan, Armenia, they attacked Iran. Looking at the picture, it's an attack on BRICS. It's something beyond what's going on regionally. And you may focus on Ukraine or Iran, but the big picture shows us that the attacks are bigger than what we're talking about. Is that the case in your opinion?
Well, it may be in Trump's mind, but none of what he's trying actually works. So China said basically, no, we're a sovereign country. We decide who to import oil from. And we don't care about your tariffs, whatever you want to call them. India tends to be more flexible. But what it really means is that India is tricky. So they'll say, okay, well, we will stop importing oil from Russia, we will start importing Russian oil from Mongolia. See, that is a Mongolian flag on that Russian tanker. Therefore, it's Mongolian oil, and that's how they're going to rule. And then people in the American administration will scratch their heads and try to figure out how to sanction Mongolia, which has zero oil and doesn't have any seafront. You know, it's a landlocked country between China and Russia. But that's how they'll operate, and the result will be just the same, because the basic point is that Russia exports 3.5 million barrels of oil a day, and there's no oil to replace it. Now, Trump actually said one of the silliest things I've ever heard, which is America has plenty of oil and we can make up for it. We can just turn up the spigot, et cetera. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know that, you know, the Permian oil patch, you know, is the only one that had been showing any promise. And the drilling rate there has dropped precipitously. And with shale oil, any decrease in drilling rate registers as a decrease in production a few months later. And there's no way to talk that oil back up, to talk that production level back up. He doesn't have those levers of power. He doesn't control that. So, you know, it just means nothing, you know. And as far as an attack on BRICS, well, maybe in Trump's deluded mind, it, you know, he thinks that BRICS can be attacked. What does that mean to attack BRICS? BRICS is a club. It's a diplomatic club. It's a bunch of representatives of countries that get together and talk about ways of not using the dollar or the euro in trade. And they don't just talk about it, they do it. So China and Russia no longer use the dollar in trade. Russia and India use the ruble and the rupee, etc. Very successfully, because with modern payment systems, you don't really have to have some kind of a centralized clearing authority in that Washington controls. That's what BRICS is about. Now, Trump senses that, you know, control of the world economy via the US dollar is slipping away. Well, it has already slipped away. And there's nothing he can do to undo that. So that's what's going on with China and India and possibly Turkey as well. Turkey is a big transshipment point for Russian energy resources. As far as Brazil, I think that Trump is friends with Bolsonaro. And Lula is not friends with Bolsonaro, therefore Lula is evil and must be destroyed. That's how Trump's mind works. But what it actually means in terms of policy or anything like that, I have no idea. Probably nothing. 90% of what Trump does or says means nothing. And so it doesn't really make any difference. So Trump's plan, as far as you know, the Ukraine latest deal, was to basically say, we'll make the weapons and the Europeans will pay us to make the weapons and then pass them on to the Ukrainians. And that's a beautiful deal because the arms suppliers in the US are happy. And that's all that matters because there's an election coming up in the United States and there have to be kickbacks to congressmen from all the money flowing through the defense contractors. Otherwise, where's the money for the election going to come from to Trump supporters? And so that was the beautiful plan, except that the Europeans don't have the money and the Americans can't make the weapons, you know, two little snags. But other than that, brilliant plan. But as far as all of these plans, you have to understand, if you've ever spent time with an Alzheimer's patient, they don't remember what they did yesterday. As a rule. So does Trump still remember what the war with Iran was, or what the deal was that he negotiated with Ursula, or the deal that he offered the Europeans as far as the weapons for the Ukraine? That was a long time ago as far as he's concerned, and his memory is basically the last video clip that his people have showed him. He doesn't read, he watches video clips. I don't know if people realize that. He doesn't read. So they show him a video clip, give him some ideas. These ideas make him preen and posture and pretend to be a very intelligent leader and a winner and a deal maker. And then he goes back and eats his soup or whatever. And you know, that's his day. I think that, you know, he's sort of a little bit like the Roman Emperor Nero, who fiddled while Rome burned. Well, Trump plays golf while America burns. That's the difference.